The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You live here. He lives here.
Thank you for helping my family and I get through these very strange times.
Can I just say how much I am enjoying your new show? Really good. You are loved.
I appreciate you, Chris. You're doing great, great service to Delaware Valley.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Did we ever establish that we know that this guy hosted a radio show? What does that mean?
He does host a show in town.
Does now?
Yes.
Where?
At another station.
One that I know?
Possibly. It's an older one in the market.
What kind, like a talk show?
Yes.
Oh, okay. See, now I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard the president pardoned a talk show host, I wondered for a second it was me. I had to check my criminal record. I didn't know for sure.
You're good.
I saw a headline that the president had pardoned a talk show host on the way out the door, and I was like, from our area. And yes. I thought, I don't know. I had to check. Anyway, hey, glad to have you with us on this Friday. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. What do you make of, another prediction I got wrong, although I'm not in this business, so I don't feel too bad about it. But who saw this coming? Even people that are in this prediction business didn't see this coming. Who's Nick Sirianni?
I know he's from the Colts.
How do you feel about that?
I haven't taken an opinion yet. I'm going to inform myself over the weekend.
Well, no one. The thing about it is, no one has an opinion. You can't really, because no one knows. People are in agony trying to form an opinion because there's no opinion to be had.
Right.
You can't like him or dislike him. He's not done anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because when you listen to people who are trying to trash him, they're reminded that people trashed Doug Peterson, too, for having no resume, only coaching high school. He came into the town and did what? Wins a Super Bowl.
Right.
Nobody was particularly fond of Andy Reid. And, you know, he didn't win the big one, but had an impressive run, for sure. And then there was the Chip Kelly experiment, who I would argue of the three, Reid, Kelly, and Peterson, on paper, I bet there was more initial enthusiasm on paper for Chip Kelly. This kind of mad scientist, ooh, how exciting, when he was initially hired of the three, I think. I think I'm right about that. Fair?
Very fair. That was an exciting season going into because there was so much hope with the players that we had.
And of the three, he probably turned out to be the biggest dud.
Oh, my gosh.
By a lot.
Yeah.
So, who knows with this Sirianni guy? So we're going to have a guy called Mark Farzetta on the show at 7:30. Talk show host extraordinaire. You've seen Mark around television, Comcast. Well, I guess they call it NBC Sports Philadelphia. I don't know if he's still doing NBC Sports Philadelphia or not. He used to. And for years, sports talk in Philadelphia on a couple of different sports talk radio stations. I think he's still doing some stuff with Fox 29. But I reached out to Mark yesterday, old friend of mine, and I said, you know, if you're sitting around and you're not doing anything, I'd love to have you on to tell me what in the world you make of this hire. Because I don't know. I mean, I love watching the Eagles. I'm fascinated with what apparently looks to be the decision to keep Carson Wentz around and make it work, despite what seems to be a team that wants rid of him. And by that, I mean the players. I mean, most of the locker room, most of the, apparently, the fan base, the city. As candidly, as wrongheaded as I think the analysis is, I, I don't understand the piling on Wentz. I mean, I know he had a bad season. I still don't think the guy's, like, out to lunch. I don't know. And maybe there's personality stuff that, how can we ever know? We'll never know. We don't know the palace intrigue stuff that goes on inside. But it appears this guy, here's what I would have guessed. Once I heard Philip Rivers left the Colts, I would have assumed Carson Wentz was going to make a beeline for Indianapolis. Made sense to me to go back to work with the guy that apparently he loved and loved to work with and really shone most brightly under, and that was Frank Reich.
That would be that's a good take. I wouldn't have seen that, but if it happened, I'd be like, oh.
Honestly, the second I heard Rivers retired, that's what I thought was going to happen. But apparently not. So then when I heard they hired this guy out from under Frank Reich, I was like, oh, well, okay. So they've apparently been talking to Reich, who Carson really likes. I mean, here's what they're saying. This is apparently how this went down. So it is said. Carson had an outsized influence in this decision because they spent a lot of money on Carson. So they're like, what do you need, man? And he was like, Doug Peterson gone. I don't like him. That's the claim. That Doug and Carson just didn't get along. And Carson said, I can't work with Doug. And they said, Doug, can you work with Carson? And Doug basically said, nope. And Doug said, I'll just take my $6 million and leave, thank you. And so, okay, like, Doug's going to sit it out for a season, it looks like, probably, and count his money.
$6 mil, huh?
I think he'll be all right.
I could watch from the sidelines.
He won't be working next season. I mean, there's only one opening left. That's the Texans, and I doubt he's going there.
Yeah.
So he'll sit out for a season and count his dough, wait it out. He'll have a job soon enough, but for now, he'll wait. So Carson's clearly, like, in charge, so I think they call up Frank Reich, a guy he likes a lot, and said, Frank, what do we do? Frank says, I got this guy. His name's Nick Sirianni. I think Carson will really like him. I mean, that's kind of almost what it feels like. I don't know.
I'm literally waiting for Mark Farzetta and your informed analysis before I start giving my take.
I mean, not to say, I'm sure this guy, I'm not, of course, it's more complex than that, but no one knows anything about the guy. So anyway, that's, ladies and gentlemen, the most important sport, maybe the most important thing in Philadelphia is the Eagles, and that's the guy that leads it now, a guy no one's ever heard of.
Here we go.
I mean, it works out one of two ways.
Chip Kelly or Doug Peterson? Which one?
Seldom is there a middle ground. So that's coming up today. Conversation with Sean Spicer, the first White House press secretary of Donald Trump's. You'll hear that today. And yes, President Trump pardoned this. This was the headline. Ardmore, Pennsylvania radio host, among those pardoned by Trump on his way out the door. And I reached out to Fast Eddie. I said, well, we got to get him on the show. If he's already naturally a talk show host, I mean, that makes sense anyway, but what the hell's that about? So we got him. Gary Hendler's his name. He'll be with us today. And of course, your calls at 610-850-0990. May I ask you a quick question, just quickly? Remember all last year? What did I say about Operation Warp Speed and the White House Coronavirus Task Force and the criticism of Donald Trump and the handling of coronavirus and Dr. Fauci? Remember what I said about Dr. Fauci and everybody's love of Dr. Fauci, and everybody believed whatever Dr. Fauci said. It didn't matter. Everything he said was gold, and Trump, nothing he could say was right. Everybody around Dr. Fauci couldn't do anything right. But Dr. Fauci couldn't do anything wrong. He walked on water. And I kept asking people to explain that to me, because it never made sense to me. My take was, and I don't think it's that profound a take, he's part of the team. Which means, when you're part of the team,
you go down when the team loses.
That's right.
You know?
Much like the Philadelphia Eagles, mm-hmm. You have a bad season, you don't get to say, hey, I was a fan. I had a stellar season. I mean, I know what our record says, but my season was great. As far as my record, you know, I'm 14-2. I know what it says on paper, but not me. You don't get to do that. Like, you don't get to extrapolate your part of the performance and say, I'm stellar. But that seems to be what they're doing. They're keeping it. Not only are they keeping him, they immediately re-engaged, the Biden team did, at the WHO. And they're sending him there. And then he has a White House press briefing, this little weasel. And the first thing he says is how liberated he feels.
You've joked a couple times today already about the difference in that you feel in being kind of the spokesperson for this issue in this administration versus the previous one. Can you talk a little bit about how free, how much different do you feel, less constrained? What is the, you know, I mean, you for so many times you stood up behind the podium with Donald Trump standing behind you. That was a different feeling, I'm sure, than it is today. Can you talk a little bit about how you feel kind of released from what you have been doing for the last year?
Yeah, but you said I was joking about it. I was very serious about it. I wasn't joking. No, actually, obviously, I don't want to be going back, you know, over history, but it was very clear that there were things that were said, be it regarding things like hydroxychloroquine and other things like that, that really was uncomfortable because they were not based on scientific fact. I can tell you, I take no pleasure at all in being in a situation of contradicting the president. So it was really something that you didn't feel that you could actually say something and there wouldn't be any repercussions about it. The idea now that you can get up here and talk about what you know, what the evidence, what the science is, and know that's it. Let the science speak. It is somewhat of a liberating feeling.
I mean, you were basically banished for a few months there for a while. You feel like you're back now?
I think so.
What a little worm. What a twerpy little rodent. So he was lying to us. So he lied. All of last year, he was lying. He was lying to keep his job, apparently. So his job is more important than the truth. So what we learned last year was Dr. Fauci was lying his bag ass off just to keep his job. His job, his magazine covers, his throwing out the first pitch, his fame was more important than his integrity. It was more important than science, was more important than telling the truth, folks. That's what we learned. He was under duress the entire time. He stood there, a victim, like a battered wife. Did you know that? That would be very interesting to me, since I asked him and gave him opportunity on this very show to clarify if he felt that there were times that he wasn't heard or contradicted or couldn't tell the American people about real science or wasn't being listened to. Or I gave him every opportunity here on this very show. And he emphatically, not only did he deny any such thing, but said that this president listened and deferred to him and took his advice and couldn't name a time for me, in fact, when that wasn't the case. What an unbelievable little worm. And why should anyone sit and listen to this man and believe him today? Why would you listen and believe him today when he just stood there yesterday and admitted he lied to protect a job? That actually makes you worse. Like, you're actually a worse person for saying what he said yesterday. You get that? You're not admirable. You're worse.
I truly can't believe that happened yesterday. I knew that was coming. I just didn't really think it would have been immediate.
If that's true, and it's not, by the way, I think that's an utter load of crap. But if that's true, that makes you worse. You're worse. You're more embarrassing. You're a bigger disgrace to medicine and science. You're a disgrace. And any member of the media or science sitting there listening to that should have thrown him out of the room, should have run him out of the room. Okay, so you can't be trusted on any front. What you're admitting is, when it comes to your job, your reputation, your ability to stand before mics and cameras and be famous, you'd rather protect that than tell the truth. That's what you're saying. That's a disgrace.
Fox and CNN both used your interview with Dr. Fauci to exactly to corroborate the claims that, you know, Trump was listening to Fauci. He was also listening to The Economists. So to do that and then completely reverse, yeah, you should be challenged by the media, especially when they use that interview.
Oh, that guy. Well, he's staying. There are two people staying of note that tells me all I need to know. Two very, very critical people that are staying under Biden. They are Dr. Fauci and FBI Director Chris Wray. That's all. That says everything without saying much more. 610-850-0990. Glad to have you with us on this Friday edition. We got a busy one. We're just getting started. 610-850-0990 on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
I could answer that question. I'd be waving my hands about that. Sorry. Well, you know, one of the new things in this administration is if you don't know the answer, don't guess. Just say you don't know the answer. Yeah.
What a dick. Dr. Fauci, we can carry that air. We can do it. Don't get nervous. Don't get trigger happy. That's a perfectly legal word there, Fast Eddie. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610, Fast Eddie trigger happy on the FCC button today. 610-850-0990. I've been doing this long enough. I know what I can pull and what I can't. That's all right. 610-850-0990. Rose, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm not a perfect authority on Fauci, but I can't stand him. But he was a serious Hillary supporter and a deep stater. They found all those emails between him and her.
Yeah.
And then just a couple comments. And then, you know, of course, working for the National Institute of Health, if you've ever talked or heard Judy Mikovits talk,
right?
Have you ever? She's awesome. I mean, he's like patenting stuff that our taxpayers' dollars are spending the money to research at the National Institute of Health. And so, you know, obviously, and he works with Bill and Melinda Gates, and I mean, to make money. I mean, somebody's got to look into. I've never trusted this guy ever. Nobody in medicine, my friends in medicine, don't. I mean,
Rose, if you're somebody that is a serious person that's in medicine and science, and you're working for someone that you really fundamentally believe is a dangerous, unserious liar, do you compromise yourself and continue to stand alongside that person, or do you quit?
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. I agree with you. You would quit. But Fauci's a snake. Fauci is, I wouldn't trust that guy if I saw him in front of me.
Yeah, I don't know why in the world, how dare he sit there today? How dare any of these people continue to sell this son of a bitch as somebody we're supposed to listen to? He's admitted now his claim is that he was under duress, like he was some sort of hostage. He was some sort of healthcare hostage, participating in massive fraud. He didn't believe the things he was saying. And that he stood silently as Trump lied about things. I tell you, I have no time for people like these. You know, it's one thing to be a Democrat and just brazenly lie. But it's quite another to hold one position until, you know, you now work for somebody else and then come out and say, oh, everything I was saying before under the previous boss, I've now completely changed my point of view. And I think this under the new boss and the way we were doing under the old boss. I mean, it's the worst kind of brown nosing, these people. It's like you have no core. This isn't even, you know, like just leave. Have some integrity and leave. Go down with the ship. You know, like if you didn't want to work for Trump, then leave. Quit. I would have had more respect for him if he'd have just walked out and done what everybody else did in deep state government and said, I think Trump's an odious monster. I don't think he listens to science. I think he's a lunatic. Hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. He's dangerous, telling people that it does, and I can't stand idly by and stay quiet. I've been in medicine too long, and I'm not going to let him ruin my reputation. Oh, but he didn't. No, he came on shows like this one and many others and said he had a great working relationship with this president. In fact, I feel we're probably going to have to, I'm so irritated by this guy, we're probably going to have to go dig back up the clip from last year just to prove the point, just to put them side by side, his snark from yesterday. Oh, so he can't opine, you see. The legitimate question from Peter Ducey, by the way, the only legitimate questions coming in this White House press briefing, he can't opine to Peter Ducey about how helpful it would have been if Jeff Bezos had lent his Amazon support to distributing the vaccine earlier. Oh, you see, I can't get into that. Fauci's too, that's too, oh, no, no, no. What's so nice with this administration, if you don't know the answer, you just say you don't know the answer. That's refreshing here. I don't have to make it up.
I do have the clip heard around the world with hydroxychloroquine. Not the working with the president, but I do have a shortcut.
Oh, because like yesterday he said that he was back to hydroxychloroquine was an absolute lie.
Yeah.
Okay, so here when I asked him about it back in the spring.
Mm-hmm. If you're a doctor listening to me right now and a patient with coronavirus feels like maybe they want to try that, and you're their doctor, you're not Anthony Fauci, the guy running the coronavirus task force right now, would you say, all right, we'll give it a whirl?
Yeah, of course. I mean, particularly if people have no other option, you want to give them hope. In fact, physicians in this country, these drugs are approved drugs for other reasons. They're anti-malaria drugs, and they're drugs against certain autoimmune diseases like lupus. Physicians throughout the country can prescribe that in an off-label way, which means they can write it for something that it was not originally approved for.
Great work in there, Fast Eddie. That's exactly right. It was the clip heard around the world. Well done to the archives.
Thank you.
Dr. Fauci, yes, absolutely, I'd prescribe hydroxychloroquine yesterday. Oh, no, that was reckless, dangerous.
What a... Oh, this
Dan, well, look, I mean, the way he throws a baseball is all you need to know. Dan, glad to have you here. Good morning. Dan's in the Northeast. You there, buddy?
No.
All right. Dan's taking hydroxychloroquine. Break here, a little past 6:30.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Company. I really don't mean to continue to flog this very dead horse, but I have to say it again because I really want to drive it home. What Dr. Fauci said yesterday was, I stood alongside Donald Trump and I was willing to allow the American public to be misled, and I was willing to stand by misleading statements, and I was willing to endorse, and I was willing to allow misleading information and unscientific information to be uttered. And I was willing to do all of that for fear I would lose my job, for fear there would be repercussions on me. Okay? So in saying that, what he's admitting to everyone when he says that is, I'm willing to do anything I have to do to keep my job. And so when you're dealing with someone who says that aloud, you now know about that person, they'll do anything to keep their job. Meaning, you no longer can trust anything that comes out of their mouth from that day on. Starting now. Including today, under Joe Biden. And I know that just because you leftists think Joe Biden is the Pope, or whatever self-flagellating thing you told yourself about his speechifying and his executive orders, and I know you think he's on the good of sweet side of goodness and sweetness and light, but for just a minute, be intellectually honest and understand what he's admitting. There's no leftist, there's no person in medicine that dare call me and argue this point. You don't dare. You cannot be a nurse, you cannot be a doctor, you cannot be a person in medicine and call me and argue this point today. That man, supposedly the leading infectious disease expert in the world, or the country, or some such thing, just told the American public his job mattered more to him than anything else. And so if we take it face value, he stood alongside and willingly told the American people lies for fear of losing his job. Then what happens when Joe Biden tells him to go out and mislead the American people? Oh, Joe Biden wouldn't do that, leftists tell themselves, I suppose. Oh, I see. I mean, how many presidents has Fauci said he's worked for now?
I think since Reagan, right?
So Reagan through now Biden. None of them have told him to lie except Trump, I suppose. Is that what we're to believe?
Of course.
Only Trump was the liar, quote, liar.
Yes.
Only Trump was engaged in misinformation that Fauci had to go out there and peddle for fear he'd lose his job. I see. It really asks a lot of us folks. Coming up, former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, Mark Farzetta with us, Philadelphia sports radio host for a number of years. This new hire. I was reminded, by the way, this Nick Sirianni for a brief time, wide receivers coach under former Chiefs head coach and, frankly, utter disaster in Kansas City, Todd Haley, who then went on to become I think he was offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh for a time. And that didn't work out either. For Kansas City Chiefs fans, that was a bad time, Todd Haley. Scott Pioli was the general manager. He came from the Patriots. Oh, that was bad. What a horrible time that was. You take a general manager from the Patriots and then a hothead head coach. It was just, that was dark. That was, oof. That was high drama in Kansas City. Weird. We get the weirdest stories out of that period of time. In Kansas City, there were stories that said that Pioli, the general manager, used to leave wrappers, like candy wrappers, in the stairwells of the stadium and would purposely monitor how long it would lay in the stairwell before someone picked it up, and then would enter like executive-level meetings and throw the wrapper down and say, this was in the stairwell for however long. And it was one of these good to great things. He was one of these dopes that believed that the equipment manager on the team should care that a gum wrapper should be picked up in the stairwell of the stadium, kind of a thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
One of these Tony Robbins, we all have to care about everyone's job deal.
Yes.
So, anyway, that's who this guy came from. Nick Sirianni was a part of that for a while.
Oh, perfect. Did you wash your hands? Yeah.
We can't. No one can be good until everyone is great. Or some such thing. I don't know. Leave me alone. Let me do my job.
Right.
I'll stay out of your way. You stay out of mine. That's my attitude. Steve's in West. I was never much of a great teammate, I'll tell you that. Steve's in West. I would not have gotten along with a Fauci. That's for damn sure. Steve in Westchester, how are you this morning?
Good, Chris. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, listening to Fauci, this doesn't surprise me. I mean, early last year, before everything hit the fan, he told the American people that we didn't have to worry about wearing face masks.
That's right.
And then he later on admitted that we did have to wear face masks, but he didn't want to cause a panic and have everybody, all those regular people, buying up all the masks for ourselves and instead wanted to save it for the public officials. So this doesn't surprise me. He's a company man.
He is, and inconsistent and wrong. I mean, he's been so wrong. You know, it wasn't even a year ago he was telling everybody to go about their normal lives and that this was no big deal. I mean, it was not a year ago. Not a year ago. He was on national television saying, don't sweat it. No big thing. And it was 9 months ago he was on this show telling people, oh, sure, hydroxychloroquine. Absolutely. He pays no price for anything he says. Doesn't have to. He gets magazine covers and gets to throw out first pitches.
That's what's so frustrating. That's what's the most annoying thing about all of this, is that there is no accountability. When you spoke with Dr. Stephen Hahn from the FDA, he wouldn't go down a I don't want to say a rabbit hole, but he push back and be like, Chris, I don't really know, you know, I have confidence in what we're doing and this and that. And Fauci gives direct answers, and then they're wrong, and no accountability, doesn't have to pay anyone for that.
Yeah, like, two things can't be true. You can't come on a show like this one and tell me that Donald Trump is completely accessible and listens and has never not listened to the advice he's given and doesn't not listen to, we get along just fine, and if science is involved, and I believe the science is paramount, he listens. You can't come on a show like this and say that and then stand up there credibly yesterday and say the opposite. Like, you're lying to one of us. I guess it's to me, but to what end? Are you lying to me? And so if you're lying to me, to what end? I guess the answer is to keep your job, to keep Trump happy. You don't really believe that? You really hated Trump all along? So your job is that important to you? The paycheck, the prestige, the action, to be in the middle of it? I don't know. Like, everybody wants a paycheck. I mean, nobody wants to lose their job. But I think I've told you, I mean, we find ourselves as broadcasters in an unprecedented era right now of censorship. I mean, I talk regularly with colleagues of mine in this business. It's a chilling time. I mean, we're all kind of talking amongst one another right now about what the future holds for us. And I have to tell you, in no uncertain circumstances, do I need to make a living for my family? Yes. Will I become a whore to do it? No. Do I need this job so badly that I will sit here and just stop saying what I think or start saying what somebody tells me to say? Absolutely not. I did not get in this business to be told what not to say or what to say. I just won't do it. It's not that important to me. If that's what I have to do, well, then I'll just go get a corporate job and get out of this. Similarly, I would think if I were infectious disease or epidemiology, if that's meaningful work to me, if I really believe in the medicine and saving lives and studying health, if along came somebody that I thought was a buffoon who was going to make me lie about medicine, and I really believed in my heart and soul he was making me lie and compromise my integrity of my life's work, and I'm on in years and I have a reputation and a resume like Fauci, I think I'd walk. I don't think Donald Trump is worth sticking around. I mean, it's how I felt about Bill Barr. I know he's kind of a dirty word now for a lot of us, but my attitude about Bill Barr all along was, he didn't need that job. He came off the bench. Bill Barr was done. He was retired. He was riding out into the sunset. And Bill Barr was like, you know what? I think justice is a mess. Okay, I'll do this. And I don't think he was loyal to Trump. And some of you say, damn straight he wasn't. Well, for better or worse, Bill Barr didn't care what Trump thought about him. And Barr, I think, gave his unvarnished opinion about what he saw was right or wrong or what he thought needed to be done or whatever. And he just didn't care. And if Trump said, I think Barr's a jerk, like, Barr didn't care. He didn't need the gig. He doesn't need the money. Similarly, you'd think a man of Fauci's advanced years and experience and resume, same deal. I don't need it. I've been around. People know who I am. I'll get another gig or I can retire. I don't need this. You'd think. But it just, folks, what it proves, excuse me, what it proves is what it's the wiring in bureaucrats. There is a special kind of wiring in bureaucrats that it's hard to understand for most people. because most people are normal. And people in Washington, D.C., in Beltway culture are not normal. They're not wired like you and me. It's why octogenarians are still in power. They're a rare breed. It's why Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi and Pat Leahy and Chuck Schumer, these people, have you watched them this week in these ceremonies? They're like they've emerged from crypts. They're hunched and they waddle and they slobber and they drool. And you know, Bernie in that meme, and he's hunched. And they all look like corpses. Night of the Living Dead. You and I, most of us, we aspire to be retired. Not them. These people, you will have to pry them from the seats of power, from the trappings of their office. You'll have to pry them from it. Literally, their corpses will have to be pried from it. The power structure, the fame, the title, the prestige, it has nothing to do with you, by the way. They're just addicted to being in the power center, lording it over everyone else. The addiction to the adulation. I mean, some people it doesn't move, but for some people it's like their oxygen. And it's not hard if you imagine it. Some people really dream of this stuff. Close your eyes and imagine being the guy all media in the country is hanging on your every word every day. Every day you wake up and you put on your suit or you put on your, you know, your outfit, your dress, ladies, whatever. Every day you're getting yourself made up, you're shaving, or you're doing your hair and putting on your makeup or whatever, and you're looking in the mirror, realizing you're getting ready to go on national television because you know that every interview you do, the people doing the interview, not only love, adore, and respect you, but they're hanging on your every word for information about how they can go back about their daily lives because they're frightened, and the information that you have will make them feel better or worse about their day, how they can carry on about their business and their lives and get their kids back to school and their businesses up and running. Do you understand the extraordinary amount of power in that? I know that you do. That's significant power.
Yes. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, and so it's what the superhero movies are made of. It's what the Marvel films are made of. It's
Spider-Man.
And bad guys get a hold of that kind of power too, by the way.
Yep.
And do bad things with it. It's as old as time, that story. It's addictive and it's misused. That's why it's so significant. Our history is so rare globally. That's what makes the story of our founding, that's what makes George Washington such a special, remarkable, historic, impressive, important figure. Arguably the most powerful, important man in our nation's history, maybe global history. He could have amassed more power at a critical juncture in the world than ever before, and he didn't. He walked away from it voluntarily. And what you're seeing now in the Faucis of the world and a lot of the decrepit octogenarians in the Democrat Party is just the opposite. They don't ever want to walk away from it, ever. If they could figure out a way to never have to walk away from it. In fact, what are they doing? They want to do away with filibusters. They want to pack courts. They want to... Power centers are what they want to pack and embolden and strengthen. It's just the opposite of the way we were founded. It's their oxygen. It's their fuel. Those people, that inauguration this week, watching those people, it was like watching their balloon inflate again after 4 years of it having been deflated, while the country class, the people of this country's balloon had been inflated for just a brief, scant 4 years. the people's balloon was rising for 4 years. And theirs had been deflated for just a bit. I don't know. That's the visual. That's what I feel. That's what I sense. And I think that's what we're all sensing here. The power structure has reasserted itself. 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. Sean Spicer on the way today. Mark Farzetta, 7:30 today. Gary Hendler got a pardon. I've never talked to anybody that's been pardoned by a president before. What's that experience like? That's at 8 o'clock today. He's an Ardmore resident. Hosts a talk show on WWDB here in town. We'll talk to him. Also, from the Independent Women's Law Center, how about Biden's executive order expanding protections for boys that want to be girls and compete in girls' sports? Jennifer Bracaris, the director of the Independent Women's Forum, will be with us to talk about that new fun law. Liberal women, feminists. Watching feminists fight with trans wackos yesterday was some of the most fun I had. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Your opinion matters. Take the poll at 990theanswer.com. Sponsored by Stillman Volvo. Four generations in Westchester. Online at stillmanvolvocars.com.
A friend of mine in Wisconsin yesterday texted me. He said, well, it caught up to me. He said, I got coronavirus, Chris. I said, oh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. Are you okay? He said, oh, I think I'll be okay. He said, it's my fault. I'm fat. I'm got
this
asthma.
Is WMPP,
it's my problem.
Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. A Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. Here, he lives here.
Chris, I love your show.
With everything that's going down, it really sucks the life out of you. I mean, and with your sense of humor, it kind of softens the blow a little bit.
Hey, Chris, good morning to you, and just wanted to enjoy your show, and you and Fast Eddie are doing a great job over there. It's a beautiful day.
Because each of our countries have that independent spirit, but we don't want to be told what to do. Well, I understand that, but now is the time to do what you're told.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Nobody that knows the events of this week better than a guy who was literally in the middle of them all 4 years ago. Quite a high-profile role, as a matter of fact, if you remember. And by the way, not a fawning reception did he receive 4 years ago this week. Sean Spicer, now host of Spicer & Company, weekdays, 6 o'clock on Newsmax. Spicer, how you doing, my man?
Good, Chris. How are you, man?
I'm good. Look, it's great to talk to you. I wonder, how do you feel sitting behind a desk at Newsmax now watching this as opposed to experiencing? Do you feel like, whew, glad it's not me? Do you miss it? Is there whimsy? Do you remember it fondly? What do you think about it, watching it?
Well, the question changed yesterday, Chris, because prior to that, when it was still the Trump administration and either Stephanie or Sarah or Kaylee were press secretary, I was actually glad to be a viewer as opposed to a briefer, because it had really become too intense. I enjoyed my time. As I said before, it was an honor and a privilege to do it, but it had run its course for me and my family and my sanity. That being said, watching the briefing yesterday, I would have killed to have those questions. You know, what was it like? This is not a joke. One of the questions is, what was it like when the president walked through the Oval Office? Another question, which was just so tough, was, what did the president think of President Trump's design for Air Force One? I mean, those are literally questions.
Yes, I saw Saki. Look, she seems like a lovely lady. I don't know anything about her. She seems smart and capable and all those things. But, yeah, the questions were jokes. Peter Alexander said, what are you going to do to restore trust? And, you know, are you and basically are you and Joe Biden going to start telling the truth? And, yeah, do you like the color of Air Force One? And what did you do to make it safe for the president from COVID in the White House? And BuzzFeed's headline, by the way, Sean, their takeaway from yesterday was how refreshing it was. Their headline was literally, if I may, sorry, the first White House press briefing of the Biden presidency was extremely mild. They say White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki's first briefing was respectful, thorough, and relatively newsless. Now, is that something we celebrate now? Newsless?
Well, the New York Times actually said the same thing, and it's funny for a bunch of press to turn around and say, oof, thank goodness, we don't have to work. I will say this, just on the record. When I did my turnover at the White House, Jen Psaki was communications director then. Josh Earnest was the press secretary in the Obama. They were unbelievably generous and kind with their time and their well wishes. And I wish Jen the absolute best and same. It's a very small club of press secretaries, but she was absolutely supportive and generous when I took over. And I want to wish her the same. But my issue isn't with her. It's with the press corps. It is the fawning is unreal. I mean, these guys, with all due respect to Jen, I'm not sure she is needed, because I felt like the press corps was like, hey, Jen, you don't need to do this. We got this. We'll just say great things.
Sean, can you talk about the events of the day, that inaugural speech? I don't know, your review of it, because it was – you talk about gushing and fawning. I mean, my gosh, Chris Wallace said it's the best inaugural he's seen, and that includes Kennedy, for the love of all that's good and holy.
Yeah, I know. Well, I got to be honest. I almost feel like some of these folks feel like they need to bend over backwards to suck up to the administration. Here's my thing. I've always said this, like, speeches are speeches. I mean, like, I think it was fine. I don't think there's anything great about it. I don't think he stumbled on anything, but it was devoid of real policy. He talked about the divide in our country. I actually think my beef with what's going on right now is this campaign, and so far now into the transition, the first day of the Biden administration, you know, they've almost hidden the ball on policy. We hear about, like, oh, they're going to let 11 million people who crossed the border as late as a few weeks ago become citizens. And it was like, did you guys forget to mention that during the campaign?
Yes. And meanwhile, Antifa, loud and proud, out there smashing windows, F Biden, they're spray painting. They're not standing down. So welcome to the party, Joe, right? I mean, if anybody thought this was just about Trump, apparently they're making it known it wasn't just about him.
Yeah, I had Dana Loesch on my show yesterday with Dave Rubin. And as you know, she's got a great radio show.
Fantastic.
Like yours.
Yeah.
And she said something really profound on it. She goes, you know, it's not like unity's great, but that's not what we should be talking about. What we should be talking about is respect and civility. And I thought she's absolutely right. I agree with this. Look, I am a hardcore believer in conservative principles. I make no apologies about that. But I believe that we grow the conservative movement when we champion and sell our principles and our policies and explain why they are better for families and communities in the country, right? I don't want to bend people into submission, which is what the left wants to do. It wants to silence you. I want to win you over, right? I treat politics and policy like a marketing exercise. You grow your market share when more people want to buy your product, your idea, your candidate, whatever, right? I want people to say, you know what, you're right, Sean. Respecting life is something that is important and that we should protect. And, you know, you've really made some good points, and therefore I want to do it. Cutting taxes is good for the economy, and I think we should do that more, right? I want more people on our side. That's what I believe. So I take that tack. Maybe some people don't share that in terms of a tactic. That's my personal view. And I just – this idea of unity is this concept that they keep throwing around on the left, and it doesn't, to me, it just means submission. It means, you know, okay, folks on the right, we will tolerate you as long as you just kind of stay quiet in the corner.
Sean Spicer, host of Spicer and Company on Newsmax, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central. The thing that I watch now with great interest is a lot of Republicans seem to be suggesting, people like Mitch McConnell, people like Liz Cheney, that President Trump, well, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, I'm sorry to say, seemed to suggest on the way out the door that President Trump was engaged in behavior that was worthy of impeachment and perhaps even conviction in the Senate. And all I know is from my listeners, Sean, that leaves such a sour taste in their mouth. And we're right back to where we started pre-Trump, a Republican Party that is so angry at its, displeased with its base, and a base that's angry at its party. And it's like we just hit reset and we're right back to where we began before Trump even got here, which is unfortunate because Trump had done.
Chris, look at all the countries that are like, thank God he got elected. We're back to normal.
Right.
I want to get along with folks. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think we can be respectful and civil, and that includes our foreign adversaries and allies. We can respect our differences. We can grow our relationships. But we're not everybody's patsy, right? President Trump stood up for America, for our trade, for our workers. And I don't want to suck. I would love to get along with all the other countries. I want us to be respected around the world. But I don't want us to be their lapdog, where they get to say, hey, good, let's go suck American consumers in the American market and take them for a ride at their expense. I want. Hey, you want to have a trade relationship with us? It goes both ways, right? That's my view. And I think that this idea of, like, all these countries sitting around and saying, phew, now we can get back to normal. Normal means, okay, I get a great deal again, and you guys can suck it up. I don't know why that counts. And the other thing that I will just touch on this impeachment stuff is, you cannot like someone's behavior. There were things that the president said, frankly, and I've said this before, I didn't like the way he said some things. But that's not why you impeach somebody. You say to them, hey, I didn't like your behavior. If you think about it in a criminal sense, right? Something that you go out and if you act disrespectful or say something inappropriate, you don't go to jail, right? You get, you know, censured or spoken to and said, hey, Chris, that was really inappropriate language you used. That interaction was not respectful. You don't send them to jail. And politically speaking, you don't impeach somebody because their rhetoric wasn't what you like. You can censure them. You can call them out. But you don't impeach somebody because of their language. The Constitution says high crimes and misdemeanors. So I'm not saying you need to support President Trump. I'm just saying you need to like him. You need to understand that if this becomes the new standard, that we don't like what you say, we are going down an unbelievably dangerous path. Because the second that you just start saying, I don't like what you say on the other side of the aisle, I'm going to impeach you, good luck.
Which, and I'll close with this because I know your time is short. I just wanted to play this for you. I know you've heard it because your network where you work now is invoked in this clip. This Alex Stamos with Brian Stelter over the weekend. This is just remarkable.
Now we're talking about domestic audience in the United States. And the challenge is going to be partially that, you know, ISIS did not have a domestic constituency in the United States Congress. But there is over half of the Republicans in Congress voted to overturn the election. And there will be a continual political pressure on the companies to not take it seriously. So I think first, you have to focus on those violent extremists, and those companies have to be brave in that way. And second, we have to turn down the capability of these conservative influencers to reach these huge audiences. There are people on YouTube, for example, that have a larger audience than daytime CNN, and they are extremely radical and pushing extremely radical views. And so it's up to the Facebooks and YouTubes in particular to think about whether or not they want to be effectively cable networks for disinformation. And then we're going to have to figure out the OANN and Newsmax problem. You know, that these companies have freedom of speech, but I'm not sure we need Verizon, AT&T, Comcast, and such to be bringing them into tens of millions of homes.
You're a problem. The Newsmax problem.
Yes.
We got to figure that out, Sean.
Figure out. Here's what he said that people have to understand. It's one thing to cancel us off cable, which in itself is a whole discussion about how wrong that is. We reach millions of people every day. They find us a threat. Right? Remember this. We covered this extensively on my show. CNN, when they say this and encourage it, and it's beyond just Brian Stetler and his guests, because their other media reporter, Oliver Darcy, says the same thing. They want the AT&T owns CNN. What does AT&T also own? Time Warner Cable and DirecTV. This is them signaling to their bosses, get them off the cable system. We reach 70 million homes. right? That is a threat to CNN's viability. They don't like it seriously. But what Alex Stamos said that was even more concerning, and this is unique to Newsmax, beyond us being on all of these cable stations around the country, if you have cable, you can get us. But here's the uniqueness thing about Newsmax. It's different than Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and everything else. If you want to watch Newsmax right now, and you have a smartphone or you have the internet and a computer, you can. You can go on YouTube and watch us. You can go on Newsmax.com and watch us. You don't need a cable subscription. You do need a cable subscription with every other news channel, ESPN, you name it, TNT, TBS, Home and Garden. You don't. You can go anywhere in the world that you can get the internet and watch Newsmax television. And what he was saying right there in that clip was we need to shut them off the internet as well. And that's dangerous. They are basically scared that you might hear something that's not the state television that they propose at CNN.
Do you have any reason to believe, sincerely, that people like Joe Biden or any member of Congress would seriously embrace that attitude right now?
I don't, but here's the thing. I don't need to worry about them. I need to worry about the head of AT&T, the head of Verizon, who they can just unilaterally say, hey, we're canceling,
yep,
or we're not going to let you guys, or think about this. They start saying, hey, we're going to block you from, you know, we're Comcast, and we're going to figure out a way to make sure that, you know, you can't use Comcast cable to get us, right, or Comcast internet. I don't know, but that's what they're proposing. It's kind of, and you saw this discussion pick up the other day on MSNBC as well. They are trying to basically get the corporate world to say, do not carry these hooks.
Sean Spicer, former White House press secretary, now host of Spicer and Company, wildly popular program, 6 Eastern, 5 Central on Newsmax. Check it out. People are by the millions. And I'm so grateful that you made time. I know this is a valuable time of day for you, sir. So thank you for joining us.
Bye. You bet, Cliff.
Coming up, who is this guy that the Eagles have just hired as your new head coach? We'll talk with Mark Barzetta at 7:30 about it. Also, a Philadelphia radio host, pardoned by President Trump on the way out the door. You'll meet him at 8 o'clock. And mamas, don't let your babies grow up to play girl sports because boys can dress up as girls and beat them. Now, thanks to Joe Biden. We'll talk with the director of the Independent Women's Forum about that new aberration on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. You know, I readily confess I am completely detached from what is front page news today, supposedly about this vaccine panic that's going on out there. I acknowledge it must be news to some of you that are really anxious about getting this vaccine. It is not to me, so I have to confess it's not. I'm not living it. I don't feel it in any way. I'm not internalizing it, so I have to defer to you on it and ask at 610-850-0990. If you're, and I'm not being snarky about this. I'm asking with due deference and respect. If you're eagerly anticipating getting a vaccine and you're trying to get it, maybe you've already gotten it or you're trying to get information about where to go get it. I'm reading here in the Daily News today. Great frustration and gnashing of teeth out there that people can't figure out where to find to go get it and how to get online to get it and no coordination about where to get it. This co-authored piece in the Daily News, David Zales, 82, spending an hour on Montgomery County's website before he realized all appointments to get the vaccine booked. Another couple in Burlington County pre-registered on New Jersey's website at the same time, but got appointments that were more than 2 months apart. A Phoenixville 67-year-old guy contacts multiple vaccine providers but hit dead ends when he tried to make an appointment. 5 weeks after the vaccine rollout began nationwide, millions now eligible to get the shots in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, but the states are still receiving far fewer doses than they need. No centralized system for administering them. Confusion and frustration reign among the vaccine-hungry public. Now, I am not among the vaccine-hungry public. I'm not even thinking a little bit about getting this vaccine. So I don't share the panic. But I readily admit that there are, I guess, a lot of people in our midst, Fast Eddie, that are very, very excited about this. So I defer to you. I don't. This is like people that, I guess, fight one another at Walmart on Black Friday for TVs. I don't do that, but I guess there are people that do. So I open the phone at 610-850-0990 if that's you. Do you know any of these people?
I do, yes.
Like are trying actively to get them or have already gotten it? Or
Trying actively to get it. And my one friend works in healthcare, so he already got his. And my other friends are pissed off at him because he already has it. It's like, well, he...
Really? They're angry with one another?
Yeah.
Pennsylvania and Philadelphia have no plans for a centralized scheduling system through the state. But the state will facilitate registration for mass vaccination clinics once they open and don't currently have phone hotlines. Well, that sounds like a Dr. Levine issue. You know, our soon-to-be christened Assistant Secretary of Health at the federal level. So I thought the brilliant Dr. Levine, who's about to be called the number two of all health in the country, you'd think that we'd have a master plan here in Pennsylvania for this. No? Okay. What do I know? State and local health officials have asked the public for patience and said it would take months before people can be inoculated. As of Wednesday, 454,879 first doses have been administered in Pennsylvania, and as of Thursday, almost 400,000 in New Jersey. Most have gone to healthcare workers and nursing home residents in the top priority group. Montgomery County Commissioner Val Arcouche, a physician, said it's been a confusing and frustrating week for a lot of people. I don't want to create false expectations. Very few places have received the vaccine, and very few have received very few doses. Okay. Well, I mean, again, I don't. It's an extensive story. Long wait times ahead. Philadelphia Health Commissioner Thomas Farley acknowledging turbulence was inevitable. Many people are eager to get vaccinated. That's a good thing, but it's simply going to take months for us to vaccinate everybody. Officials said essential workers should wait to hear about vaccination plans from their employers. Said residents over 75 with medical conditions should ask doctors if they have doses available. They also said hospitals should be calling patients, but warned that even people currently eligible may have to wait weeks or months. Biden says what, 100,000? No, a million? A million in 100 days? I forget the...
Yeah.
I forget what he says. The next 100 days? I can't remember what his metrics were exactly. Something like...
When I announced it, you all said it's not possible. Come on, give me a break, man.
Give me a break, man. He didn't like that question yesterday when they asked him about it, which was basically the pace that...
100 million vaccine shots in 100 days.
That's what it was, 100 million in 100 days. Which was already what the Trump administration said they'd had their sights set on.
Right. Yes.
So, and apparently media is saying isn't fast enough as it is. All right. I mean, I don't know. Donna, good morning. Glad you called. Hi.
Good morning. Always love to listen to your show. I'm here in Palm Coast, Florida.
Oh, that sounds sitting lovely. On my
it is nice. It's already 63, I think, outside, but don't want to rub that in. Sorry.
In the free state. I got it.
Yeah, it's been pretty great, except for trying to get a vaccine. You guys are in for it. This is, even though Florida's, I think, taking the lead in this, it's still a crapshoot. Yeah, I got up at 6 a.m. this morning to get on the local supermarket website, Publix, because they're distributing vaccine, and I'm still sitting here at 7:28 just waiting for a spot on the computer. And I've done this three times this week.
So, I know DeSantis a couple of weeks ago made a comment that, hey, you know, hospitals and other people that get a hold of this, they're better suited to arrange this stuff than we at the government level are. That was basically his take on it. Is it your understanding that private entities are still kind of arranging how these are being distributed?
Well, Publix just came on board, I think, about 2 weeks ago. And that's the big, you know, it seems to be the big go-to over the individual county departments of health.
Yeah.
Because their rollouts really seem slow. Publix is scheduling more appointments. Like, I did the same routine on Tuesday this week with the supermarket. I don't know where the hang-up is. I really think it's just in supply.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they got to crank these things out as fast as possible.
Boy, so. And I'm telling you, the demand is over the top. So, I mean, population, we're a rather small county down here in Florida, but you guys in Bucks County, Delco, Philly, it's going to be a wait.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's the demand is just so, so great. And it's extremely frustrating. I worry about the old lady sitting in her house by herself who doesn't have a computer. What are these people doing, you know? The people that really, really need it. It seems everything is high-tech. Get on the computer. Get on your phone. What are these old folks doing? That's who I think is going to drop through the cracks on this.
It's a great point, Donna. It's an interesting discussion, and I thank you for raising it. 610-850-0990. Let's go to Berks County. Talk to Kevin about it. Kevin, what's on your mind this morning? Hi.
Good morning, Chris. I went online with Lehigh Valley Health Network last Tuesday, made an appointment for yesterday at 8:30 in the morning, was in, got my shot, and was out in 15 minutes and have my follow-up appointment already made. Now, I'm a first responder. So I'm part of that first tier of people. But there were probably 80% of the people getting shots were over 75 years old. They had six tables set up to give shots. There was no more than two stations at each table that were busy at any one time during the 15 minutes I was there. They have ample supply. They've done a good job in Berks and Lehigh County. If people need a shot, contact Lehigh Valley Healthcare. They're doing a fantastic job, and Berks County's doing a great job.
Hey, Kevin, do you, because I'm curious, there are different kinds of shots, right? Do you know which kind you received? Is this the one where you have to go back and get a second one in a few weeks?
Yeah, I got the Moderna shot. Mm-hmm. And you, all the shots currently, you have to get two.
Okay.
Johnson & Johnson is the only one who has a single shot, and that's supposedly in late stage approval with the FDA and may be available in about 6 weeks.
Okay. And then are you already scheduled to go back and get a second one?
Yeah, the 18th of February.
Okay. Well, Kevin, that's great. That's an upside bit of news for people that are eager to get it. Berks County doing it well, Kevin says. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Mary's in Rockledge. Hi, Mary. Mary, good morning. Hello, Mary. Oh, I'm sorry, Jay. Jay, let's try Jay in Yardley. Sorry about that, Jay.
No problem. I just wanted to say my mother is 83 years old, and she lives alone, and she recently lost her husband to COVID. And long story short, I've been trying to get her, you know, on the list for a vaccination. And, you know, her being 83 years old, I did send her text messages. She had no idea about how to do it, the computer part of it all. So I reached out to my state senator, and he basically said that it was the federal government's slowness of getting the vaccine out, and that was the problem. So I then went on the CDC website and noticed that Pennsylvania was either, I think, the fourth or fifth in the amount of doses they've received from the federal government, and the amount they've given out is not all very lot compared to what they've received, and likewise with most of these states. But that, you know, to me, the doses are coming out. I don't know that they're getting to the people as fast as they are. That information is readily available daily on the CDC website. So I don't know that article that you were referring to, if they knew to actually look at that thing, because those numbers weren't jiving with what I've recently looked at.
So, Jay, your read is that the doses are there, but the states aren't necessarily all buttoned up in terms of how they're getting them to where they need to go.
Yeah, I, th- think it's, I'm not exonerating the federal government at all. You know, I mean, you know, it's the government. So, I mean, they're probably, you know, they don't, I just don't believe that they have the capacity or the know-how to actually handle something like this. But, you know, it is what it is. But, I don't see it. I see that it's just a mess between the two, you know, the two governing bodies of the states and the federal government. I don't think there's any good cohesion between them. And I don't know how Joe Biden thinks he's going to, you know, that's a million vaccines a day, and he's going to do that in 100 days to get to 100 million. But I'm not sure he knows math, so I'm not going to give him too much credit as far as that goes. But.
Right. Well, Jay, thank you. Sorry about the loss in your family. I hope that works out for your mother. Fauci yesterday asked by Peter Ducey about Amazon now getting involved.
How helpful would it have been if Amazon got involved with the federal response to COVID-19 before Biden took office? And do you know about any plans or discussions ahead of yesterday?
No, I don't think I could answer that question. I'd be waving my hands about that. Sorry. But, you know, one of the new things in this administration is if you don't know the answer, don't guess.
Yeah, a little snark thrown in for good measure. But the answer to the question is, of course, you know, you got to give Bezos and Amazon credit for one thing, and that's logistics. There's nobody in the country that's figured out how to more swiftly and nimbly get products from door to door better and more economically than Amazon. And they hate Donald Trump, but they sprung into action and volunteered their services the second Joe Biden was sworn in. And so Peter Ducey legitimately asking the question of Fauci yesterday, wouldn't it have been helpful if Amazon had stepped up before now? Fauci, oh, I'm not going to speculate on that. Yeah, I'm sure you won't. I mean, look, it's tough, like, regardless of the president, regardless of politics, like, it's tough anyway, and Jay is right. I mean, states, we're not hardwired to do this. This is not, and by the way, not for nothing, like, you got to keep this extraordinarily, it's not like you're not moving around bricks or whatever. This is, like, temperature-controlled stuff. Sub-zero storage. This is not, you know, you're not moving around Lunchables or something. Yes. It's hard. It's hard work. All right, we'll stay on top of that. Quick break, and when we get back, who's this guy they hired to be your Eagles head coach? Mark Farzetta will hopefully give us some insight.
If you love the Philadelphia Eagles, let me get a hell yeah!
Well, I think people are a little tepid at the moment, but mostly out of just confusion. It's not even, I don't even think people are mad. They're more mostly confused from what I gather. Daily news cover today. Sorry, who now? Hear that, fans? Some guy named Nick Sirianni is Peterson's replacement. Sorry, who? That's the cover today. I think that pretty well sums it up. Old friend of mine from way back, Mark Farzetta, joins us on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. I called him up. I said, Mark, I'm dying to know what you know about all this. And he was kind enough to wake up early and make some time for us. Mark, good morning.
Oh, my daughter is a year and a half now, so she is up early anyway. Dog, this is sleeping in, as far as I'm concerned, my friend. Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Great to talk to you, man. Yeah, I saw this name pop up couple of days ago, as most Eagles fans did, and thought the same thing. Who? And then, you know, you do your Google search, you go on YouTube, you watch a couple of clips, a couple of interviews, you read a couple of bios, and then all of a sudden you're the guy's best friend. he's an interesting candidate. He is a very Jeffrey Lurie type of coaching hire, because when you go back through Jeffrey Lurie's history of owning the Birds for 25 years, he's never hired a coach that has been a coach, a head coach, in the NFL. It's crazy to think about it, but he's never done it. Andy Reid was at best an assistant head coach when he was in Green Bay, but really a tight ends and quarterbacks coach when he was out there. Chip Kelly was obviously a head coach in college, but that was it. And Ray Rhodes wasn't a head coach either. And Doug Peterson, same thing. So Nick Sirianni kind of comes from that, I'm going to find the next good head coach in the NFL type category that Jeffrey Lurie likes to hire. And then what goes along with this, and this is what I think a lot of Eagles fans are looking at right now, you could have hired almost anybody as a head coach that was a little bit under the radar, like Nick Sirianni is, And it wouldn't really jump out to them, because the bigger problem, or the other problem, is the problem that's still here, which is how the Eagles draft. So I think a lot of people want to look at this with some optimism about who the Eagles hired, but a lot of the problems that were there last year are going to be there in the upcoming season, because Howie Roseman is still drafting, and Eagles fans still feel like Jeffrey Lurie has a lot to do with football decisions in the organization.
Now, I don't know anything I'm talking about. This is pure speculation about palace intrigue. So I'll just, I'm guessing. Sure. But all this Carson Wentz talk has been interesting. And I think it's not a secret, and it's pretty obvious, that Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson didn't see eye to eye on things, to put it mildly. And sure. So the decision internally was that they were going to part ways, Doug and the Eagles. And that the Eagles decided they wanted to continue to work with Carson. It is thought that Frank Reich and Carson were quite tight. This Sirianni comes from Frank Reich's program, and I wonder if there's something there. Is there a connection there where maybe Frank Reich's voice was heard and this had Carson's blessing to a degree, and that there's some communication line there? Could that be possible?
Not only possible, I think that's 1,000% accurate. I think that the Eagles did try to reach in the past machine, so to speak, and try to bring in somebody that would be able to reach, coach, and fix, and I hate that word, but fix their franchise quarterback, because the money's there for Carson, as everybody knows. The money's already invested, so they want to do whatever they can to make sure that they're getting a return on their investment. And Sirianni is certainly an attempt at that because of his relationship with Frank Reich. And I know one of these clips has gone viral, and I believe it's from the coaching combine a couple of years ago in Indianapolis, when Frank Reich was asked about why he chose Nick Sirianni as his offensive coordinator. Now, he doesn't call plays out there. Frank Reich did for the Indianapolis Colts. But he said, I went back and I brought him back because we worked together with the Chargers, and I knew back then, and this is some years ago before Frank Reich was with the Eagles, I knew back then that Sirianni was going to be a great offensive mind and a great coordinator, and that's exactly what he's done for me. So it was a huge vote of confidence even then for Frank Reich to say that about his offensive coordinator, and I'm sure the Eagles got on the phone with Frank Reich again and said, what can you tell us about Sirianni? And he told them all glowing things. And from a Carson perspective, even more so, if you're Carson Wentz and you had your best years under this guy's mentor, he might already know what makes you tick. He might already know how to correct some of your mistakes, because odds are they had conversations about Carson Wentz, Sirianni, and Frank Reich. Because it's not just the Eagles doing research here. If Sirianni's smart and a guy that jumps from a D2 coaching job all the way to the NFL, I would assume he's pretty smart and knows how to handle people. I think that he actually went out there and actually talked to Frank Reich and said, okay, what do you got to do with Carson to get him back on track the way you had him on track back in 2017.
Mark Farzetta, are you an Eagles fan who believes Carson Wentz is damaged goods and his best days are behind him, or is there more to be done with him? Is there a future? Because, I mean, that is about as polarizing a subject as ever I've seen, particularly now with the arrival of Hurts in the later part of the season. People were ready to move off of Wentz and just be done with him.
I don't think he's cooked. We've seen the flashes from Carson. And I think that you can go back. I don't know if you can get MVP form. It's possible. I think that's a little too optimistic at this point. I have to see a lot more. But I don't think he's damaged goods. I think that for so many things to go wrong the way the Eagles had go wrong in the last season and a half, really, and Carson Wentz, going back two seasons ago, was the lone bright spot at the end of the year with the way he played. This year, yes, he played terrible. Isolated, not judging anything else, just judging the quarterback. Quarterback play was among the lowest rated in the entire NFL, so that's awful. But then you look at the offensive line. Then you look at how coaching went. You look at how the drafting did not work out for this Eagles team. You look at injuries. So many different things did not work out for this team. I can't just point at Carson Wentz and go, oh, well, this is obviously all your fault. I think you got to judge him after a quarterback competition in camp, this upcoming training camp, and go from there. I think you can get back to at least a smidgen of what you had in 2017 from Carson Wentz. And here's the other thing. Jalen Hurts didn't go and steal anybody's job. Jalen Hurts looked good in a couple games, maybe a game and a half, and then regressed as his own season went on after he took over the starter job. I think the Eagles botched the whole quarterback thing, to be honest with you, last year. They should have put in Hurts earlier and then seen how Carson Wentz responded later. But when it comes to just Carson, It's going to come down to that quarterback competition going into next year for him to prove that he can take this job back, and it's up to Sirianni to get him back on that track.
Boy, it's a huge. I mean, nobody saw it coming, and there was a lot of chatter too about this being an internal hire with Deuce Staley. There are a lot of angry Eagles fans that it wasn't Deuce.
Yeah.
What do you make of that one?
Yeah, I'm with everyone as far as loving Deuce, respecting Deuce, and thinking Deuce is going to be one heck of a head coach one day. I thought that day would be a little bit closer. I thought they would have came already, but for whatever reason, the Eagles were in a spot where an internal hire probably would not have benefited them in the least. I will say this. If I'm Nick Sirianni, the first phone call I'm making for my staff is to try to keep Deuce Daly in Philadelphia, because you're going to need that conduit in the locker room. Because as reports have come out, Eagles players themselves were texting Jeffrey Lurie saying, we love Deuce. Deuce is great. A former player here, a leader here, Malcolm Jenkins, made it public saying, I'm just letting you know right now, after Doug Peterson was fired, Deuce is my guy. Deuce would be my choice. For whatever reason, Deuce Daly has not been seen that way by the Eagles in his entire time here in Philadelphia. And you know how it is. You get a new boss, and they want to come in, they want to make changes, and that's in anything. It's not just sports. I think that happened here in Philly, where they needed to really overhaul what they were doing almost as a head coach from Doug Peterson to move on to somebody that was more objective, and also a guy that, again, is going back to the realm of getting back to what Carson Wentz was able to do in 2017, and Sirianni, with the connection to Frank Reich, might be able to do that. Deuce, it might be more of the same of what you've already seen from this Eagles locker room.
And finally, the Howie Roseman factor. It seems that if there was any love between Eagles fans and Howie Roseman, that's largely lost. I hear it sounds like the jury has largely ruled, and they're no fans of his any longer.
it's funny. Daryl Morey was doing an interview around the time he was just hired as the Sixers general manager and president of basketball operations, and he said, "Man, I'm hearing a lot of hate towards Howie right now." He goes, "Didn't he just win a Super Bowl? You should get 5 years after you win a championship." And I remember thinking, oh, Daryl's going to get to know Philly real quick. that is all gone away. You're absolutely right. People have looked at these drafts. They have looked at the flash positions in football, most notably wide receiver. They see guys out in Seattle like DK Metcalf catching touchdown passes, making a Pro Bowl. They see a guy like Justin Jefferson set a rookie record this year for receiving out in Minnesota. And they had opportunities to get both those guys. And not only did they not get both those guys, they took Jalen Reagor and they took J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. They took guys that really haven't made any impact on the football field at all yet. And when you have that type of immediate impact on an offensive game, the way Jefferson and DK Metcalf have had, and you see two guys not having any impact at all, yeah, it kind of makes you look at the general manager and go, what is it you say you do here when it comes to drafting? Because it hasn't been successful.
I got to tell you, Mark, I would have put, and I said it, I made the prediction here. I was betting money that Lurie was on the phone with Andy and Bieniemy was on his way to Philly. I would have bet any money Eric Bieniemy would have been hired here. Seriously, I thought this was his year to be hired here. And I'll be damned if it doesn't look like Bieniemy may be staying. I can't. Are we talking about a second year that Bieniemy might not be hired as a head coach somewhere? Houston's it. I can't even believe that.
Yeah, I'm shocked. Talk about the Eagles, fine. What about the entire NFL?
It's crazy.
All the jobs that were open. It's insane to me. Him, and then I almost found it insulting with the Eric Bieniemy conversation, the fact that Mike Kafka,
yes,
was getting talk about being a head coach before Eric Bieniemy. And I went, look, I know I've interviewed Mike Kafka a couple times when he was drafted by the Eagles. I don't know anyone that shoots up the ladder that quick, man. And Eric Bieniemy has been sitting there waiting and working there under Andy Reid in a bigger capacity than Doug Peterson was, and still sitting here waiting for Eric Bieniemy to get a job.
Mark Farzetta, it is a pleasure to talk with you again, my man. If you're available and able, we would certainly love to continue to talk with you as the year rolls on. You have any favorites as we head into this the closing weeks of the NFL here? Are you picking the Super Bowl yet?
Well, I mean, am I allowed to not pick the Chiefs on your show?
Listen, I feel good. I'm one of those guys that once you get it done, I feel like I'm satisfied. I'm not going to be angry if it doesn't work out again. I still feel good about last season, you know? I'm still dining out.
Yeah. Something tells me, and I will do this, and this way your listeners will know I'm objective. I do think the Packers are going to win. I'm taking the Packers to go all the way. Now saying that, watch them lose to Tampa on Sunday. But something tells me with Aaron Rodgers being 37 years old, Aaron Rodgers is too good a quarterback. And I know, look, there's been Dan Marino never won any. But Aaron Rodgers in this day and age and as pass happy as the NFL is, Aaron Rodgers is too darn good to only have one Super Bowl ring. And I think this is the year he gets his second.
He's Mark Farzetta, and I hope you're not going to be a stranger, sir. Thanks for making time today.
You're still my favorite left fielder, Chris. Don't you worry.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, bud.
That's Mark. We played more than a few home runs for hearts for the American Heart Association out there with the Phillies out there. That was a lot of fun. That's where they stick the guys that aren't very good, by the way, out in left field. You know that. anyway, that's a lot of fun. We're going to see Nick Sirianni, your new Philadelphia Eagles head coach. So he confirmed what I thought. Tight with Frank Reich, who's tight with Carson.
Yeah.
He's here to work with Carson, first and foremost.
Well, somebody has to, I guess, if we're putting all our eggs in the Carson basket.
Your opinion matters. Take the poll at 990theanswer.com. Sponsored by Stillman Volvo. Four generations in Westchester. Online at stillmanvolvocars.com.
You better watch who you're talking about. Run in your mouth like you know me. You gon' fuck around and chill. Why the show me? Get caught and show me. Why one-on-one you can't hold me? If your last name was Hayne, only way you were me out is stitch my name on your pants.
You ever been pardoned by a president before? We'll find out what that's like next.
Yes, AM 990, The Answer. Download our free mobile app at 990theanswer.com. You live here. He lives here.
Chris, good morning, man. I'm glad to hear you back on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to know, with all of the factual information you put out and all these positive upbeat guests, are you considered part of the mainstream media anymore?
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
All right, a little past 8 o'clock. Mercifully, it's Friday. I find myself the last couple of weeks just never. Look, I love being here with you folks. Love the work we do here, but these last couple of weeks, I don't know about you, but it's been like a tooth extraction. And I've never been more grateful to have a week in our rearview mirror than maybe this one. So glad to be with you, though. And the telephone number, 610-850-0990. I came across a story this week from 6ABC, and the headline, I told Fast Eddie, I go, look at this. Ardmore, Pennsylvania radio host, it headlined. Among those pardoned by Trump during final hours of presidency. I was not aware of the story. And I said, well, if this gentleman's willing to come on, I would certainly love to hear about it. And so we reached out, and Gary Hendler said, yes, sure, I'd come on and talk about it. And so we were grateful for his time. And Mr. Hendler, welcome to the show this morning. Hello.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
So, if you don't mind, I don't know how much of your story and your background you want to share with the audience here, but I guess it's kind of important as the whole reason you're here is the Trump pardon. So, if you don't mind, could you talk us through what brought us to this day?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm an open book, so
okay,
anything goes. So, what brought me to this day? The day of the pardon on Wednesday.
Yes,
I guess the short version. I grew up in Philadelphia. I was in the music business, was involved in making a lot of hit records. I went to law school, was thrown out of two law schools. I was addicted to drugs by the age of 15 years old. Multiple arrests. When I came back from law school, I was involved in an illegal operation. It was a clinic. It was a pill mill.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I was only there for a couple weeks. My partners threw me out. This was 1980. And I roamed the streets at that point for 2 years. I had nowhere to go.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Gary. How old a guy were you by that time?
27. So, 1980. Come back from Philadelphia from law school, open up the clinics. I'm there for 3 weeks. They threw me out. I roamed the streets. I was arrested multiple times. In 1982, I decided to get clean. But unfortunately, the clinic operated until 1984. Okay. So I'm clean from 82 till today, but for the purposes of the story, I was clean for 2 years. The clinic was raided. The FBI came to get me. And because I was least involved in this operation, they just wanted information from me. They wanted me to testify against everybody, and I did. And everybody went to state prison except for me. So I was charged with one count of conspiracy to distribute narcotics, and I was given 3 years probation in 1984 with a $300 fine. But it was a federal offense, and so this federal offense, this conviction, has been haunting me since October 30th, 1984.
Oh, my gosh. So in 84, you're hit with this. This is after you've gotten clean.
Yes.
And yes. It's the least of the associates of yours. They went to prison. You did not. But it's a federal offense. And so what does that mean for people that don't understand it? What does that do to you in terms of your record, your ability to work and that sort of thing?
Well, luckily for me, Chris, I've always had my own businesses. But to have a federal felony or a state felony conviction can hinder you in multiple ways. Your gun rights are taken away immediately. Certain kind of job security positions, they would never hire you. I was lucky. I'm also, you know, I was just lucky. I didn't need to get any kind of special licensing or anything for the work that I do. But for a federal felony, the only person who can pardon you is the President of the United States. That's it. So 6 years ago, I decided I'm going to submit an application to the Department of Justice. And that's the normal channel. It was an 85-page application.
Wow.
I had an attorney help me with it. Yeah, it was 85. I'm actually looking at it right now.
And Gary, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm interested in the process because for you, obviously, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, I'm sure, but why was it important for you to be pardoned in the first place, to seek a pardon?
You know what? It would be the end of my criminal activities, the end of my drug addiction. It was just a closure for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it is. And, you know, and it's also, you know, it's almost like, you know, when you can't get something, you really want it. So I really went after this.
So it wasn't for you. It's not so much about making a living or functioning in any way. It was more for you. It was truly just a personal thing for you.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, interesting. So this 85-page thing is submitted to the Justice Department. How long ago?
It was 6 years ago. It was the last couple months of the Obama administration. So I live in Ardmore. So as soon as that was submitted, the FBI comes to my neighborhood and starts back knocking on people's doors, asking what kind of person I am as their neighbor. I knew it was going to happen. I mean, I signed up for it once I put the application in, that I'd be opened up for this kind of scrutiny. It was approved the last couple weeks of the Obama administration, but that was way too late. So then it carried over to President Trump's administration. I didn't hear a word from anybody in the last 4 years. Wednesday morning, I said to myself, hey, I know the president's going to pardon people. It's his last day. Let me see if I'm on his list. I knew darn well I wasn't going to be on it. And I saw my name. I couldn't believe it. I was the only person pardoned in Pennsylvania.
Do you know, do you understand? I don't. I'm asking genuinely because I don't know. How does it work? Why did you wind up on that list? Do you know why or how?
Chris, I have no idea. I mean, I really don't. I have no idea. I mean, you know, look, I deserve this pardon, but there are plenty of people who deserve this pardon also. So I don't know how I got on the list. You know, you know, maybe some of it is, I guess, you know, I do talk radio also.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, I won't mention the radio station, I guess.
No, that's okay. You're on WWDB, is that right?
Right, and three stations in Florida, yeah.
Okay.
So, and my shows are all about addiction and recovery. So I'm sure that played into my story when they reviewed which application he was going to sign.
Mm-hmm.
And that I've been clean for 38 years and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, that is an issue that was very important to the Trump administration, this issue of addiction, yes? I believe it
is.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yes, very, very important.
But to be fair, and that's an interesting thing you brought up, the Obama administration was looking at you, had been vetting you before that.
Yeah, it was too late. I knew that the process was going to take, the legitimate process was going to take at least 2 years.
Yeah.
So it was too late in his administration.
That's interesting. Do you have any sense of? Because I don't. I don't. You know, they always talk about a flurry of pardons in the last minutes of a presidency, but I never have a sense of. Can a president just pardon as many people as he wants? I don't really understand how it works. Yeah.
If Donald Trump wanted to pardon every federal criminal with one stroke of his pen, he could do it.
Okay.
Any of the presidents can. So, you know, Trump did not pardon a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all the presidents, it's different numbers. Some presidents pardon a lot, some don't. This pardon process goes back to Thomas Jefferson. And but in the last 20 years or 25 years, it is only the president of the United States that can pardon a federal felon, which I was until Wednesday.
Gary Hendler is with us. He was pardoned by President Trump on Wednesday as President Trump left the White House. Pardoned him. Only Pennsylvania to be pardoned. Does that give you any kind of particular feeling or sentiment, and I guess your family or friends toward the president particularly?
Well, if I saw him, I'd say, Mr. President, thank you so very, very much. I mean, he did it, you know? He did it. You know, did I agree with everything that he did as a president? No, I don't agree with any of the presidents. But this guy came through for me. I'll never forget it.
That was one thing I was just curious. And I didn't mean to have you here to have a political discussion. But, I mean, were you a supporter of the president's or no?
I was not.
It's okay if you weren't. You weren't. Okay.
I was not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so does that, I'm honestly asking you this. It's not a trap. It's not a trick.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that just because he pardoned you, you endorse him now for his politics. But, I mean, what does it mean to you that you don't support him politically, but he did pardon you? Does that change anything for you or no?
Yes, it does. It shows me that even though, and I'm assuming he knew I didn't support him, even though I am a Republican, that's the type of guy he is. You know, it's just not, you know, I can honestly say he didn't just pardon people who supported him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a feather in his cap for me, for sure.
Well, Gary, I was very interested in the story anyway, and I guess in closing I'd just ask you too, is there anything you'd like to share while I have you on the issue of addiction generally? I know that's a subject, obviously sure, that's close to you and you talk about a lot, and we can all benefit from hearing about it.
Right. I'd like to say to everybody, there's help out there. There's treatment out there. You know, I say on my shows, there's no delivery. There's no drive-throughs, but there is help out there. And you can get clean and sober. Millions of people do. And, you know, do it. Change your life. Become part of life. You don't need to live in a world of addiction. You absolutely don't. And I'm living proof, and there are millions of people. You know, nobody would have thought that I would be clean for 38 years. I couldn't even get one weekend in. So it's available. Go out and get it. Get clean and sober and have a great life.
Yeah, and once you reach a day where you've just decided today's the day I want to be well, it really can be it can be that day. I mean, it can be that it doesn't. It's one of those things that I think for people that are stuck in it, they think, oh well, yeah, that's sure, you say it like that, like it's that easy. But I think you have a moment of, you know, for some it's spiritual. I don't know that it's for everybody, but when you decide it's time, there is help, and it can be that clarifying, right?
And Chris, you can get help, and it doesn't cost you any money.
Yeah.
People are afraid of that. You can get help for free. It's out there.
Mm-hmm. Gary, thanks. How can people reach you if they want to find your show or reach out for help or talk to you or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. My, you know, my show is on in a clean and sober radio on WWDB Fridays at 3. They can reach me that way.
Okay.
They can they can call the radio station, leave their name and number, and I call everybody back.
Great.
Because I know what this means. You know, it's no joke.
Congratulations on your pardon, Gary, and good on you for turning things around and really doing the Lord's work with your life. That's really wonderful stuff.
Hey, Chris, thanks, and thanks. I want to thank you for doing all the great work you do on 99 AM.
Thanks, pal. Have a great weekend.
All right, be well. Take care.
That's Gary Hendler. How about that? That's pretty cool. I don't know. I was just processing sort of the thought of spending 30 years with that hanging around your neck, and then one day you just get a random call, not expecting it. Hey, the president says you're good now. That's quite a monkey off your back, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Let's do it.
The racism thing to me is, I was offended in the speech. I mean, I thought it was a good speech. It wasn't a great speech, but it was a good speech, and it was the right speech for the moment. But there was a point in there where he said, we're divided as a country between the people who believe in the American ideal and racism, nativism, and fear. No. We're divided as a country politically over questions of policy and direction and respect. But we're as united as a country against racism and nativism.
That's right.
There are people in this country who are racist. There are people who are nativists. But the vast majority of Americans stand together on those issues. And that was an attempt to basically say, if you're not for me, you're part of the group that's racist and nativist and fear-mongering, which I didn't think was a good note to strike. But I think that's part of it also is the payoff to the left of the Democratic Party. If everything is a problem, if every issue we face as a country has ultimately a root in racism, then that's what the left believes, and that's what he's willing to give them a rhetorical, a rhetorical gift on.
That's exactly right. Karl Rove on Fox yesterday. Exactly right. Well, who's again? This is not Joe Biden's presidency. This is Barack Obama times three. This is Barack Obama, term three. This is not Joe Biden. This is Kamala Harris as authored by Barack Obama. And this is that speech was written by Barack Obama. It was authored by Valerie Jarrett, Kamala Harris, Barack Obama. Joe, you sit down. We're going to put these words in the teleprompter. You're going to read them. Karl Rove is exactly right. This country is unified against racism. This country is not a racist country. And it's preposterous to suggest otherwise. And then as it's just classic Obama, except an old white guy is going to have a very hard time pulling off the idea that if you oppose him politically, you're racist. That was a great trick for a black guy to say. It's going to be very hard for an old white man to pull it off. I mean, he's such an empty vessel that activist black people in his cabinet are writing speeches for him, thinking they're writing like they speak. So they're literally writing speeches, forgetting that the puppet that sang the words is not them. And it's like, no, guys, you're writing it in your voice. You got to write it like you're the old white man saying it. It doesn't make sense for an old white man to tell whites that they're racist against him for not supporting him. He's their race, too. I mean, that's honestly what's happening, I promise. Anyway, telephone number 610-850-0990. This mask thing. He signs a new edict that if you're on federal land, have you noticed that everybody in the Biden administration is now wearing double masks?
No, they have two?
Everybody's got the dual.
Oh.
Matt. Now, Biden has been doing it for a bit, but Psaki, the White House press secretary, came out yesterday double strapped. So did Boot. Edge.
And then you have a young guy, Boot Edge. They're saying how to say his name. Boot Edge. Boot Edge. You say Boot? and then add edge, Buttigieg.
I think something went out where they all were told now it's got to be double mask. You got to wear the N95, and then you got to strap another piece of cloth over the top of that. So it's like this, it's like they're lifting, you know, moving. You know those blankets they put in the back of U-Hauls to move furniture?
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. They're lifting heavy blankets off of their faces now when they speak. So for the next 100 days, very important, everybody mask up on federal property.
The brutal truth is it's going to take months before we can get the majority of Americans vaccinated. So while we increase vaccinations, we're going to take steps necessary now to slow the spread of the disease as well. One of our 100-day challenges is asking the American people to mask up for the first 100 days, the next 99 days.
What the hell have we been doing? I love how he acts like that's not what we've all been doing. We've all been trapped behind these damn things for the better part of a year already. He acts like he's just showing up and telling us something we're not doing. Somebody called me yesterday and made the best point. They said, Chris, you know, it would be so nice. I heard all these people talking about, oh, thanks to the healthcare workers and thanks to this and thanks to that and thanks to the brave these and thanks to the brave those. And she said, that's all nice and that's all well and good. But she said, how about a damn thank you to us? I said, what do you mean? She said, the American people. How about a little thank you? How about just a little bit of a, just a nod to say, we know what you're going through. We know what hell this is. We know what an inconvenience this has been. We know how frustrating and exhausting this has been. We know how grinding this has been. We know that it's cost many of you jobs and some of you your businesses and your livelihoods. We know that it's ruining your kids' school and your education. We know that it's cost some of you your marriages. You've lost homes. You can't pay your rent and your mortgage. We know some of you are back on drug and alcohol in big ways. We know what a toll this is taking on you, the American people. And so most of all, we thank you for the sacrifices that you've made in trying to combat this virus. We thank you, the American people. I thought, what a sublime point. And if you don't doubt, you shouldn't doubt, I should say. Don't you doubt. January 6th, the day they talk about the great insurrection. I know everybody thinks that that was somehow a moment about the election and that it happened in a vacuum. To the extent that those people were angry and that they were sincerely there to either be supportive of Trump or let their voice be heard about the election, let me tell you, it's about much more than the election. 74, 75 million voters in this country that voted for Donald Trump, they're mad about a lot more than the election. This virus, what this virus has done, the way we've been treated, particularly people like us in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, we've had it. We're tired. We're damned exhausted. We're ground down. And we're given no hope. We're given no optimism. We're given no credit. There's no inspiration. It's just boo-hoo-hooing and sobbing and lectures and more lectures and lectures upon lectures. There's never any light at the end of the tunnel. There's never any hope. There's never any optimism. It's just always, oh, folks, dark winter, brutal days ahead, bad and bad and bad, and it's going to be worse and worse and worse. And here's the real reality. Here's the stark reality. Here's the harsh reality. And then Fauci rolls out and he says, oh, boy, if you thought it was bad before, our real fear is February is going to be even darker than January. And, boy, if you thought February was bad, March will be even worse. And while we see that maybe there's going to be a vaccine, don't get comfortable because there'll have to be a second dose of the vaccine. There's always a caveat. And then before you know it, you can start to talk yourself into thinking, maybe there's never an end to this. Maybe there's never not going to be mask wearing. In fact, I even said it yesterday on social media. I go, you know, I'm not going to keep doing this forever. At some point, the mask thing's got to stop. Enough with the mask. It can't be both. Mask, vaccine. Pick one. Pick a horse. It can't be both. Like, the vaccine's here. Well, we don't have enough. We got to make sure everybody. It's going to take months before everybody. Okay, and then once everybody is, can we take the masks off? They're not saying that. Now listen to people. Start listening carefully, and you're going to start hearing people in certain corners say, oh, well, no. Just because you've had the vaccine doesn't mean you can't spread it. And one begins to wonder, you piece this together and you start to sense that these people just really enjoy telling you what to do. This vaccine and this mask thing, it's like a dog collar on you and me. It really is. It's like a human dog collar. It's like getting your tag at the veterinarian for your dog or cat. It's a politician's way of tagging you like an animal. This mask, this vaccine, show your papers, wear your mask. And if you don't, you're not in ordinance. No, I don't like it. I don't like it even a little bit. And they know what they're doing. And I'm getting tired, real tired, more than tired. I've been tired for a while, and so have you. And they're giving you no deference, no credit, no optimism, no hope. By design, they're not.
The masks have become a partisan issue, unfortunately. But it's a patriotic act.
Yeah.
But for a few months to wear a mask.
A few months.
No vaccines. The fact is that they're the single best thing we can do. They're even more important than the vaccines because they take time to work. And if we do this as Americans, the experts say by wearing a mask from now until April, we'd save more than 50,000 lives going forward. 50,000 lives.
Yeah, now until April. And then April comes? And then what? You think we're done in April?
No.
We're never done. This is never over. It'll never be over. It's never over. It's endless. It's not over until we make it over, folks. And that's just the stark reality. Oh, also in his flurry of executive actions, here was a really important one. Your girls in competitive sports in school, look out. If the boys want to decide their girls and compete against them, they're free to do so. Joe's on the job. We'll talk about it next on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Yesterday, the Biden administration issuing an executive order expanding LGBTQ non-discrimination protections. Sounds nice. Really, the big issue, the only issue, the most meaningful issue, is the issue of women's activities and women's sports specifically. And I have fundamentally never understood this. It's not hard to understand the confusion and the frustration. And if you got online, if you're on Twitter yesterday, one of the interesting... What was the hashtag, Fast Eddie? It was one of the most amazing fights I saw between feminists and trans activists yesterday. Two left-wing groups fighting with one another. It was amazing. Because feminists realize what this did sets them back, too. And they're not happy about it.
It was Biden erased women.
Biden erased women. It's hilarious, actually.
It was a great day on Twitter yesterday.
It really was. I mean, when you see left-wingers going at one another, it's fantastic. So what are we talking about here? What's the concern? Well, here to give us a little color commentary on the matter is Jennifer Braceras. She's the director of the Independent Women's Law Center. And Jennifer, I'm so glad you could make time for us this morning. Isn't it nice when you can sit back and watch leftists pick one another apart? It makes our lifting a little less heavy.
I guess, if it weren't so upsetting,
I know.
You know, the underlying issue.
Yes.
You know, and it's not just liberal or progressive feminists who are upset about this. Conservative women and conservative feminists, so-called, are upset about it, too.
And I guess to set the table fully, which I didn't quite do, to oversimplify this, we're talking about the transgender issue specifically, and that is men, boys, now identifying as girls or young women, and then specifically competing in and participating in women's activities and sports. And just because biologically they're men and boys, I mean, what you find, I mean, and we've heard these stories, and it's been adjudicated in court cases already, biological men and boys are beating biological women and girls in competitive athletics. That's not hard to understand, but yet orders like these from the Biden administration force that existence anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, what the Biden administration basically did was apply a Supreme Court precedent which dealt with the employment law context. The Supreme Court held last year that employers cannot discriminate against transgender employees or applicants. And the Biden administration took that precedent and ordered all federal agencies to apply it to any statute that prohibits sex discrimination. So that means, you know, fair housing laws, but most importantly, Title IX, which covers education and women's sports. So he extended a Supreme Court precedent beyond the context in which it was decided. Now, in fairness, that's something lower courts were already starting to do, but he accelerated it, and with one stroke of a pen, applied it in a way that is hugely detrimental to women's sports. And one point I want to make that I think a lot of people miss is that this isn't just about transgender athletes who are the exception to the rule. This is about all male athletes, because if you read carefully the reasoning in the Bostock case, which came down last year, and you apply that to sports, what that does is essentially prohibit single-sex teams, because the court basically said you can't consider sex in making an adverse decision. So what does a coach do when they have tryouts and they tell a boy, no, you can't be on this team? They're considering sex and making an adverse decision. So if you apply the Supreme Court reasoning to Title IX, you are essentially saying you can never have single-sex sports. And if you think that boys will never want to try out for girls' teams, you're wrong. That might be true in a high school context. At a college level, if you're a male athlete who's a pretty good lacrosse player but not good enough to play on a men's Division I team, why not try out for the girls' team? Or if you're a field hockey player, as many men are, in South America and Europe and Asia, and there are no male field hockey teams at the college level in America, why not take the Biden executive order and sue for a place on a Division I field hockey team? So this is going to have implications far beyond the transgender situation. It's going to have implications all over the country in many contexts.
Jennifer Braceras is with us. She's the director of the Independent Women's Forum Law Center. Excuse me, the Independent Women's Law Center. Pardon me. Jennifer, I really do kind of wonder, for all we sat through, particularly in the first year of the Trump administration, I remember all the women in the knitted pink hats.
Oh, God.
And we were told what an assault on women the Trump administration was. I vividly remember women in particular, the women's groups that were so affronted.
Right, where's your pink hat now?
Right.
Time to break it out.
I mean, isn't if ever there were a pink hat issue, it seems it's this one.
Oh, it certainly does. It certainly does. And, you know, again, I'm sympathetic to the argument that, you know, look, these transgender people just want to be included and we don't want to discriminate against them. Of course we don't want to discriminate against them. But The thing is that varsity sports and college-level sports are not open to everyone. They're not inclusive places, right? It's not like a public school which has to welcome everybody. It's D1 sports and varsity sports are by definition exclusive. And so you can't, it's not a place for everyone. You have to qualify. You have to meet certain standards. One of the standards you have to meet is being the appropriate sex, biologically. So it's not a matter of, you know, we're not trying to be inclusive. This is a very unique area. And, you know, even radical progressive feminists like Martina Navratilova have said, you have to have sex-segregated sport. If you don't have sex-segregated sport, women will not have opportunities to be athletes. It's that simple. And it's a unique situation that needs to be dealt with separately from other areas of anti-discrimination law.
One imagines that colleges will just simply, and schools will just stop having activities as opposed to try to navigate this. I could see they would just quit as opposed to try to navigate it. You?
It depends on the school and it depends on the level. You know, a lot of college athletics make a lot of money from some of their sports. You know, they're not going to stop offering revenue-generating sports, that's for sure. But I'm not sure. I mean, you know, there will be lawsuits over it, but unfortunately schools deal with a lot of lawsuits these days over all sorts of things, from discipline to disability, and, you know, public schools just raise taxes to keep paying for it. I mean, you know, so I'm not sure it'll stop them from offering the program.
Well, and similarly, I mean, I have to say, as I flip it around, then I think about it from a men's sports perspective and women who play, can you force a men's team to accept women? I mean, if you're talking about a skill-based, audition or tryout, can you?
Yeah. But the problem is, in most men's sports, women won't be the better players, right?
I mean,
there's certain sports and certain positions. Women can be kickers in football, golf, sailing is probably the best example where men and women are equal. The playing field is sort of equal for men and women with sailing. So there are some sports, and a lot of those sports are already co-ed, right?
Right.
So the Division I sailing teams are already co-ed, and that's fine. But, you know, if you start saying we're only going to offer one soccer team, come one, come all, and try out.
It's a disaster.
You know, that soccer team is usually not going to have any women, and at the most, you know, in certain seasons, we'll have one woman.
And similarly, if you start allowing an influx of men into women's sports, I'm trying to walk out what that means. You know, when you take a look at the women's college basketball circuit, for instance, I mean, if you started to have a high population of biological men playing women's college basketball, for instance, what does that ultimately do competitively to the whole makeup of the game?
Yeah, I mean, it'll change the game, but it will, you know, first of all, there's risks of injury that you have to take into account. There are fairness issues, right? If one team has, you know, look, I'll give you an example. I'll back up and take it to a personal level. My daughter is a high school field hockey player. Actually, I have three daughters who play field hockey, two at the college level. But in our community, my daughter's high school field hockey team played several teams this year that had three boys on the team. And, there's no doubt about it. The boys are faster and stronger than the girls.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, they didn't have the stick skills that the girls had because they didn't know the sport. They were just athletic kids who came out and said, I don't play a fall sport. I think I'll do field hockey. By the end of the season, they were kicking everybody's butt once they figured out the rules and the stick skills.
Were these boys that identify as girls now, or they were just allowed to play with girls?
No. They were just male athletes.
Okay.
So field hockey is a perfect, is a perfect example of how this executive order will affect athletes, you know, regardless of transgender status, because field hockey is a sport that in this country is mostly only played by girls and women. But in certain states, I live in Massachusetts, in certain states that have adopted state versions of the Equal Rights Amendment, by law, they have to let boys play on those. Any team that if you don't have a comparable team for the opposite gender, you have to let that gender play. And so this is happening all over the country already. And the Biden executive order extends those policies. It basically adopts, the reasoning of state-based ERAs of complete gender neutrality.
And so you can imagine then your daughter, you know, she's vying for a competitive spot on a team at college, and then there's a boy that, you know, is also vying for that same spot. Well, he's stronger and faster, and your daughter is talented and fast and strong, but not as strong as the boy. The boy gets it. I mean, it's, you know, that's how you see girls starting to get shut out, talented girls getting shut out. Yeah.
Right. It's not going to happen that quickly, right? That's the thing. It's not going to happen that quickly because people will have to bring lawsuits to get it to happen. So the way I predict this will unfold is that at a college level, there will be a student from another country, like I said, South America, Asia, Europe, who's a male talented field hockey player who comes to college in the United States and, armed with Joe Biden's executive order, goes to court and says, I want to try out for the women's field hockey team. And there will be litigation over it. And then once that person wins, if he wins based on Joe Biden's order, he probably will, then they'll have to open it up, right? So, you know, the legal wheels move slowly. But this is what the executive order has done. It's given people who want to bring those lawsuits a very powerful weapon to win and open those doors for male athletes on women's teams.
Jennifer Braceras, keeping us on top of this stuff, as she's the director of the Independent Women's Law Center. Thank you for your time. We're going to stay in touch on this and other issues.
Great.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Take care.
Have a great weekend at 8:52. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little...
Coming up on 9 o'clock, Mike Gallagher is just around the corner. Mike's in Chalfont. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Chris. Listen, with these girls' gender-neutral teams don't have separate showers, you can sign me right up.
Yeah, right there. I enjoy that. Mike already thinking ahead. That's teenage boys all over the country thinking, now's my chance to legally get into the girls' showers. Right. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. A Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.